VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning once again. It's 10 o'clock. This is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And it is a glorious Saturday morning on the First Coast. And I can only say, from looking at a couple of newscasters last night who were situated in Michigan and places like that, what a shame. If my sympathy level sounds less than 100%, it's because it is. But, man, if you ever wanted to take a trip to Florida, do it now. This is always my favorite month. My sister used to come down in April every year to visit. And I doubt if they even had a bad day ever. It was always so perfect. I love April in Florida. But I digress. Anyway, welcome, everybody, to the regulars. Glad you're back. We always appreciate you. To the new people, which we know are adding on quickly. And some of it by accident, maybe, but a lot of it by design. Stick around for the hour. You are about to have a good one, I promise you. We are going to love a lot of things about today, and a lot of it is correcting some absolute stupidity that seems to be invading the news. Now, you might ask, what's different about this week? Oh, I'll get into that. It's the same old, but it's a lot more fun this week. So I'll tell you how to get some really good information and advice, because we're going to be dispensing quite a bit of it today. Will it be right? You never know. Will it impact everybody? No.
You are just giddy like a schoolgirl today.
Well, it's pretty hard to be. America's long national nightmare is over.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, you aren't old enough to remember when that line was originally spoken, but I am.
What is that?
That was when the Nixon era came to an end.
Okay.
And it has stuck in everybody's mind if you're our age. So to bring it up again in this situation is fine. But I don't really so much care about that as I care about what it means to the average investor. And we're going to explore that today.
Yep. If you were paying attention this week, you would notice that we had a really nice week going, and then Friday came around and kind of ruined it all.
Before the release of the report.
Yeah, before the release, exactly. But I think some of that was in anticipation. Some of it was there was kind of some bad news this week. I mean, it wasn't a great week in terms of...
There was also some very excellent news.
There was, but of course, the only thing we heard on the news was the bad parts.
Course.
And so the market kind of just was floating along, going up a little bit, drifting up, I would say. And then Friday came around and it really seemed like everyone got spooked and just sold off into the weekend. And, it was more fear-based than anything.
I think everybody kind of knew that the Mueller report was coming out, because he's been cited and the offices are closed and all that.
Yeah.
Now, what if it had come out looking really bad for the administration?
Well, we already kind of knew it wouldn't, though.
We already kind of knew that, but there are some people who didn't want to be caught in the
right.
equity crunch if right. that happened, because I think it would have been really bad news for the market.
Yeah, so for the week, the S&P dropped less than 2%, or sorry, less than 1%. The Dow was off just under 2%, 1.3%. And it wasn't a bad week. It wasn't a good week. It was just kind of... It was kind of flat more than anything
What's
else.
What's far more important than that is look what they're up year to date.
Yeah, year to date, it looks a lot better. We've got the Dow up 9.3, and that's the lowest of the three indexes that we track regularly. The S&P is up just under 12%, and the NASDAQ is up over 15%. So if you're worried about equities right now, I wouldn't be.
Nope.
The other thing that happened on Friday was that the yield curve finally actually inverted.
Or did it?
It did.
Or did it?
Yeah, the 3-month 10-year curve actually inverted.
Yeah, but look where the 30 is.
But that's the part that they actually watch and track, the one that predicts recessions, actually inverted. So that is a little bit concerning to me, because it is a very accurate predictor of coming recession, but not immediately.
I am going to explain that to you.
Okay.
Not right now. This is a tease.
All
right. I'm going to explain it to you.
It has, I think, accurately predicted within a couple of years prior to the actual event, the last 9 recessions. So
it's also predicted the 6 that didn't happen.
Fair. Mm-hmm. But it is
just
one
like
of,
economists
yeah.
predict 15 out of the last 8 recessions.
Yeah, it's just something to keep an eye on. I'm not panicking by any means, but it is one of the things we track pretty closely, and it is a potential sign that things could happen down the road. So that's really weak language, and I mean it to be that way because it is not saying that there is going to be a recession tomorrow. Although if you go and browse any financial website right now, you will find someone telling you that there's going to be a recession tomorrow.
Oh, here's my stories in the stack. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going to debunk them. I promise you.
The other thing to remember is that the best returns, should a recession be coming and a bear market go along with that, the best returns usually come immediately before that recession and bear market. So to not be invested right now because you're worried about that would be doing yourself a disservice. Just my 2 cents on it.
No, I agree with you completely.
The fixed income actually had a really good week. So sometimes when you see crazy things like this, it doesn't necessarily mean that everything's bad. The long treasuries rose more than 1.5%. And that was mainly due to the Fed pretty much confirming that no more rate hikes this year. And actually, the market's kind of pricing in a possible rate drop, which is crazy.
You're introducing my clarification of this whole thing,
okay.
Even though you don't know it.
No, I didn't know that. But the aggregate bond market was up about 0.5%, and even tips rallied a little bit to the tune of about 30 basis points. So really good week all across fixed income. The other interesting thing is that despite all the negativity on Friday, it looks like we might see what's called a golden cross next week. A golden cross is usually a really bullish signal for the market. And what happens is the 50-day moving average crosses the 200-day moving average when both averages are rising, which is currently happening. So if that is to happen, that actually is a really positive sign for equities. So keep an eye on that as well.
And our trivia question is about the golden cross.
Okay, great. And there was a lot going on this week in the market. I mean, it was kind of crazy.
Wild.
For a week that didn't really move too much in either direction, there was a lot going on.
Yep.
One of the really positive takeaways from the Fed not raising rates is that mortgage rates are down, and not just down a little bit, they're down really big, like down to about 4%. And they were as high as almost 5% not that long ago. So this was reflected in the housing data. We saw single family existing home sales skyrocket in February by 13.3%, which I think was the second largest move on record. And the supply of existing homes on the market fell back down below 4 months, which is a really low number and a very positive sign for housing. So the media, again, predicting that the housing market is going to crash appears to be a bit premature.
Yeah, I forgot to tell Howard and Angela as they were leaving the station that they ought to get some sleep because I think they're going into a really busy period.
I agree.
Prices are rising.
Moderately, 4% year over year.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. So nobody likes to see a period of time when real estate is actually falling. It doesn't benefit anybody for that to happen, and it's not. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this kind of thing right after the break. So I'll give you the trivia question, then don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we're going to introduce our trivia question, which is brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And, of course, lines are open here, and you can call us at 904-222-TALK. That's 222-8255. And the callers always go right to the head of the class on this show. It's the first rule. All right, Adam talked about the golden cross. Now, we're not going to say that it's going to happen this next week.
It just could.
But I think the odds are better than 50-50
maybe
that it could happen. I'm not 100% sure if the market will interpret this Mueller report thing like I do, but I consider it very bullish, and we'll find out. Time will tell. Well, it always does.
The one thing you mentioned earlier, it will the release of the report, regardless of what's in it, will alleviate some uncertainty. The market hates uncertainty, so exactly. I think that it's better odds just from a non-political standpoint that the market will interpret it that as good news.
Okay, well, the Golden Cross, as Adam pointed out, means that the 50-day moving average crosses the 200-day moving average when both are rising.
Yep.
The S&P 500 came into being in 1928. How many Golden Crosses have we experienced in the entire life, which is now, what, 91 years, of the S&P 500? And I'll take it plus or minus two for the answer. All right, a few things that are noteworthy, I think. The number one that I believe is that there is a simplistic reason for this inversion in the short and middle part of the yield curve. Think about it in terms of supply and demand, or you can think about it in terms of what a lot of people know about bonds, where the price of a bond is inversely related to the yield on the bond, the interest rate. So what happens when interest rates rise, existing bond prices fall? How much? Well, longer bonds fall more. Shorter bonds fall less. So the whole world, made up of people like us, have been concentrating on short-term bonds for our bond portions because we knew during this rapidly rising interest rate period of the last 2 years that the longer term were going to take a price hit. Well, now, the Fed will always tell you, this is something I've preached on the radio for decades now, the longer, the Fed will tell you what their bias is. And what does that mean? Their bias means, what do you think they'll do next in interest rates?
Do they want to raise them or do they want to lower them?
A negative bias means they're looking at lowering the rates. Well, they've had a positive bias saying they're looking at raising them until this week. And this week, their bias seems to have changed to neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neutral means a period of time when you're shifting your bond holdings. All those short-term bonds, we're not selling them all, but we're going to start pushing out bond durations, meaning the maturities will be later and later. Why? Well, everybody's been selling their long bonds for a couple of years. Supply and demand says when people are selling, what happens? Well, supply goes up, price goes down. What happens then? Yield goes up. It is now changing to the point where demand is shifting out toward the middle and long term of the bond curve, and that is going to drive the prices up, which means interest rates are lower. But if you want to make a return in bonds at what is historically not even up to average interest rates, mm-hmm. and it's not going there apparently, at least not in the next year or two, if you want to make money, you're going to have to do it by price appreciation in the bond market. Meaning your longer bonds are probably going to start giving you a better return than they have in a long time. That's causing price differences in the bond market, which are in causing the inversion in the interest rates. Is it triggered by an impending recession? I do not think so. I cannot find an indicator in the world that says business isn't going to be better this year and better yet next year. One might pop up. I don't know. But I do not see it out there. The unemployment rate is at record low. 221,000 initial claims for unemployment this week. The four-week average of unemployment went down. Everything out there says this job market is great. Now, here's another thing that's happening that I really like. In the lowest decile, you know what a decile is? That means 10%. There are 10 deciles and 100%. The lowest decile of wage earners, they are getting increases in wages at over 6%, which is twice the average of all of the deciles put together.
And that's a complete reversal from Absolutely. A few years ago where they were the ones that were stagnated and the higher educated people were getting big raises.
Yeah, and there has been, I hate to even talk about this because it sounds like I agree with the idiots, but there has been quite a disparity in the haves and have-nots and the income disparities over the last, really, it started taking place if we go back hunt for it in the 70s, and sure. It's been getting progressively worse with globalization. That has reversed now, and you know there are four factors of production, something we've talked about a few times on this show: land, labor, capital, and entrepreneurship. Land sometimes gets its returns during periods of inflating land. Sometimes it's capital. When the interest rates go way up, capital gets a big return. Sometimes it's the entrepreneurs, which has been happening now for decades, because the stock owners, company owners, startups, a lot of people have been making a lot of money, but the labor portion has been taking it on the chin because so many things have closed and moved overseas to lower price labor. That has reversed now. Trump said he'd reverse it, and by golly, he's reversing it, which means that sometimes you have to impose a tariff to get other people off a dead center. He did it. It's working. Now we're seeing these big increases on the bottom. This is not a time when we're headed into recession. We are creating customers for everything that is made here, and we are making more things here. My bottom line on my own analysis, and you can take it for exactly what it's worth. I didn't charge it for it. I think things are going to be good for quite a period of time, and all this recession talk is nothing more than political hype designed to scare people. That's what I think. Hope I'm right.
Yeah, I actually didn't get to it, but I had a note from my market wrap earlier that said if you really want to predict the future, the best way under the current set of circumstances is just look at whatever the news media is predicting and predict the opposite, and you are almost guaranteed to be right.
Yep. All right, I'm not doing headlines this week because after this one, there's nothing left to be said.
All right.
Here it comes. This is from yesterday. S&P 500 could fall 40%.
I saw that.
As yield curve inverts, says analyst of one of 2018's best hedge fund returns.
So some guy that works for a hedge fund that did really well last year said that it could
He didn't
fall
even have to
40%.
Do well. Because he has no competition. Hedge funds have not made money in years.
That's true.
So but here we go. Right. You ready?
I could make that same prediction, and anyone could say that. And yes, it's very possible that that could happen.
It is.
It's not likely,
but it
could happen.
Remember the difference between a forecast and a prediction? A forecast is here's what can happen, and here's what can happen, and here's what happens. So you've got 100% of the possibilities. And then you put percentages on them, and that's called a forecast. It's like the weather. 25% of you are going to see rain tomorrow. Now, what's your forecast? A forecast is, here's what I think is going to happen. At the beach, you will have rain tomorrow. That's a forecast.
Wait, or a prediction, you mean.
A prediction, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, so the prediction of what could happen or what should happen is an educated guess. Well, it's a guess within the range of forecasts. So here we go. Stock investors should heed the warning emanating from the bond market, says at least one hedge fund manager, as the yield curve staged a stunning inversion Friday. It was stunning. It's only been setting up for a year.
Yeah.
Stunning.
Thing doesn't move quickly.
I think people are going to be surprised where the S&P 500 is trading at the end of the year. We're going at least for a 40% decline from the S&P's top, says Otavio Costa, a macro analyst at Crescent Capital. Ready? Punchline's coming.
Okay.
A hedge fund that oversees, ready?
Gold?
$52 million.
Oh, jeez.
He's being quoted in MarketWatch. I want to tell you something, folks. Adam and I run one of the smallest of small businesses. Ours is bigger than his.
That's ridiculous.
So you can take his advice or you can take our advice. And which one you want to listen to, I don't know.
when you think hedge funds, you think that each individual investor probably has $50 million with them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are billions of dollars that run through hedge funds, and those are the ones that have the high-powered managers who are supposed market experts. If you can only get $52 million in your hedge fund, you are small potatoes.
Why do you think he wants to be quoted in MarketWatch?
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody else will pay attention.
I'll say something really crazy so I can get quoted.
Exactly, 40%. Okay, anybody wants to believe that there's a 40% downturn in the S&P 500, You go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, there's a lot more of this stuff and better stuff coming with it. I'm telling you, this is just a great time to be alive.
Yeah, it's been a fun week for sure. Lots going on.
Yeah, I have. Remember the trivia question. The Golden Cross has happened how many times in the lifespan of the S&P 500? And we'll take it plus or minus two. So it's about 91 years. It's not uncommon. It's certainly not common. There's a little hint for everybody who's thinking about it. All right, after the break, we've got a whole bunch of good stuff. I want to talk, of course, a little bit about taxes because, you know, it's that time of year again. I want to talk about UBI. Know what UBI is?
Does anyone else?
Universal Basic Income, another failure. Coming up. All right, now, we'll be back right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Banwi Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banwi Financial Hour. I'm tongue-tied, Steve Banwi.
And I'm Adam Banwi.
And our trivia question is still open. How many Golden Crosses has the S&P seen in its lifetime of about 91 years? Now, last week, we got a call from Chuck, and he was asking us, because we had been discussing a bit our favorite research outfits, and he asked if an average person can just go out and use it without paying a lot of money, as we do. And we said, well, I'm not really that sure, so we'll look it up. And Adam and I have both been on their free site since, and they do, Adam says the best way to find these guys is on Twitter. Now, yeah. The name of the outfit is Bespoke Investments, Bespoke Investments. And that is a British term if you want to look it up. But they're a bunch of guys, young guys out of New York who split off and did their own thing after getting their feet wet in Wall Street. They are excellent. They're just fantastic researchers, and the way they compile statistics and charts and so on. For people like us who have to keep up on a week-to-week basis very closely, they are invaluable. And then Chuck also responded that wanted to know what we thought of AAII, which is the American Association of Independent Investors, or Individual Investors, I guess it is. And I looked in there, too, and I printed out a couple pages from their website, and they have just excellent things in here that are all free. Get a report on this one, profitable retirement planning, our teaching portfolios. By the way, if you ever want to practice doing your own thing, I think at Investopedia you can get $100,000 and do a portfolio and follow them along. It doesn't cost you a cent. Doesn't make you a cent either, but it's practice if you're a little scared of it. Anyway, that some of the people that are writing for AAIE, John Bogle, who of course doesn't do it anymore, rest in peace, John Buckingham, Jeremy Siegel, there's a list of contributors to this site as long as your arm. I would simply say, yes, they are both wonderful sites. The price is right if you use the free side of Bespoke, and wow, what a nice thing that people do.
Yeah, if you go to if you're on Twitter and you want to find them, their Twitter handle is at Bespoke, Bespoke, Invest, Invest. So at Bespoke Invest. And I was just going through their feed. There's a lot of good stuff in here. So I would highly recommend that if you're interested in looking at some of the research that we use and really respect, this is a good way to do it.
And it's not chock full of opinion stuff. That's
no,
what I like.
No, they're pretty unbiased.
Yeah, they present facts, they present data, and very scholarly articles based on years and years of practice and research. So if you are truly serious about investing, those are two good places to start. And if you ever wonder what any financial term means, investopedia.com has probably the best explanation, simple, plain English explanation of the definition of terms. And it also links to a lot of other things where you can read more in-depth things about it. So there's no excuse for anybody not understanding as much as they want to or need to become a reasonably good investor. The knowledge is the only way that you can overcome fear, and fear is everywhere. It's just ridiculous how much fear is being sold out there. All right, we mentioned that we want to talk about UBI, Universal Basic Income, but I want to tie it in also with something else that's happened, that universal healthcare, single-payer healthcare. You hear a lot of the proponents of big government talk about the countries that they admire so much, like Sweden, Denmark, and Finland. Well, funny thing happened in Finland.
That was very last strange. Week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was very odd.
It was. It seems the entire cabinet of the Finnish government got up and walked out.
They quit.
And just left. Why? Because they're going broke. And in order to stop going broke, they have to make changes to their single-payer system of health care. And yet the legislature in Finland refused to do it. So what happens? They quit.
They didn't want to raise taxes to pay for that wonderful single-payer health care system that works so magically, and so they quit.
And in conjunction with that, they have been giving out money to everybody for doing nothing. That's called Universal Basic Income, or UBI. They're ending that also. Why? Because they're going broke.
Good reason.
Yeah. When you give people money for doing nothing, they will probably do more of exactly what you're paying them to do.
Especially when, if they do go to work, it's going to get taxed at
60%. They get their UBI taken away.
Yeah. Well, and they're going to, if they do work, every dollar they make, 60% of it goes to the government.
But without it, they can walk in and get their universal health care. They can wait for their check to arrive. Now, if you want to experiment on a basis that would really make some sense with UBI, anybody got an idea how to do that? I do.
What is it?
Read the fair tax book and you'll read all about it.
Yeah, that's the only UBI that I would support.
Exactly right. In the fair tax proposal is something called the prebate, which means every single thing you buy is going to have the sales tax embedded in it. Every new thing you buy, mm-hmm. used goods do not count.
Correct.
But all the new goods you buy, whether it's an ice cream cone or a car, is going to have the embedded sales tax in it under the fair tax. Well, there's a certain amount that every family has to spend every month for basics, which means food and that sort of thing.
Clothing.
Yeah. But rather than exempting those things, which would be impossible to administer, what happens is the system provides you with a prebate, meaning that it's an estimate of the amount of fair tax you will pay that month on things that you have to have to survive. So you start out by breaking even. You get some money, and then you spend some money, and you break even. Now, above that, when you get into discretionary purchases, at that point, you are paying the fair tax, and that funds the government. Now, people say, well, that's ridiculous because you can't give money to everybody because you'd have to sign up all these people. Well, think of somebody who doesn't already have some kind of an account for, Social Security or welfare benefits or some kind of thing. But it's not even administered by the federal government. It's administered by the state governments, who get paid by the federal government to do the program. So everybody who's tied inside every single state and the District of Columbia would pay the fair tax. I assume they would extend it to the territories like Puerto Rico, too, which would really irritate them because they don't like to pay taxes. But that's another story. I digress. But under the fair tax, the concept of a universal basic income happens, but it happens in the context of the design of this very clever tax system. So if you want to support UBI, if you do it that way, I'm on your side. And as Adam said, if it's any other way, not so much.
The problem is that some of the Democrat candidates for president, one of the 100 or 200 or so that have declared so far, some of them are bringing this up, but it's not the fair tax. What they're proposing is a VAT or VAT, value-added tax, and that goes on top of the taxes we already pay. So that is a tax that's embedded in goods that you buy from the manufacturer. At every level, there's a tax between businesses. And so they try and say that business pay for them, but it's not true because it gets passed on through the end product and you end up paying it at the register. So it's a hidden tax on consumption. And then they would use that to pay for a universal basic income. So it's not the same thing because it's adding to our already high tax bills. So don't believe that if you hear a VAT and you hear it compared to a fair tax, it is not true.
VATs, the value-added tax, very, very popular in Europe.
And I believe Australia does that as well.
Probably. Now, the reason that a lot of these countries have been doing it so long, which is actually the reason why our imports and exports have been out of balance so much, is when they build something, for instance, I always pick on the BMWs and the Germans. So at every stage of production, the Germans pay a tax on that stage of production. They get the whole car ready, and if they sell it in Germany, the list price is the list price, and the German who buys it in Germany, or the American for that matter, if they go over there, they pay that price, meaning they pay the entire VAT. But if they export that same car to the U.S., they refund the VAT to all of the manufacturers that built up the car in Germany. So guess what? That car becomes a lot cheaper than the same car would there or here. Huh. Pretty clever, huh? More on that after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment is brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Call Troy at 662-9794. Trivia question is out there. How many golden crosses has the S&P had in its history of about 91 years? And it's not real bunch, but it's not unheard of either. All right, tax time, of course. What are some things that can trigger an audit? First off, not too many people are going to have to worry about audits this year. We're pretty shorthanded up there, all things considered, with everything that's going on. And, of course, tax returns are supposedly less complicated, but they're turning out to be actually more complicated than they were before because Shocking. It's the first year of a new tax law.
Yeah.
So you can't expect anything other. Here's the first one, being self-employed. Well, there's nothing wrong with being self-employed, but it does trigger some extra caution sometimes, shall we say. So just do a good job when you do your tax refunds or returns. I mean, two, taking deductions for large charitable contributions and not filing Form 8283. I won't go into the details on that. Three, deductions for rental losses. That's where you got to learn terms like passive and active and be very careful what you try to get away with. Four, alimony deductions. Perhaps some people have not heard that in 2018, alimony ceased to become deductible.
Well, only on new.
On new ones,
new
exactly.
ones, yeah.
You got to be careful when these things happen. Number five, writing off a hobby loss. Oh, boy, I've seen this one for years and years and
just
years.
Just don't do it.
Don't do it. If you start making some money on your hobby and claim it for a few years and you lose money 1 year, fine, take it. No problem. The old 2 out of 5 rule, that's not even enough in my opinion. Deducting business meals, travel, and entertainment. That can be a real red flag. If you want to go out to a restaurant, fine. Pay for it. Seven, failing to report a foreign bank account. Can't believe the times in my umpty-foo years in this business, people said, well, should I hide some money overseas? And those are the shortest phone calls ever. No. There.
You really can't do it anymore anyway.
No. Nope.
You have to report everything.
Oh, that's why the market's going to crash on the 19th of July, 2017. Absolutely. Because they started making them report those things that day.
Mm-hmm.
Except the market forgot to crash. But other than that, they were right. Number eight, claiming 100% business use of a vehicle. Keep track of your vehicle usage, people.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a log, and if not a log, then count up your trips.
The only way you can do that, in my opinion, is if you have a vehicle that is like a delivery vehicle and it is just used for business deliveries.
Absolutely true. And commuting to and from work is nope. not a business use of
do
a car.
Do not try and deduct that. You will get caught.
All right. I'm going to interrupt this program for... Good morning, Al.
Hey, how you doing?
Wonderful.
I thought I'd try the trivia question for
sure.
You. I would say 9.
You are too low. You're in the right ballpark generally, but you're a little too low. So it's not as uncommon as we might think being such a good thing. We appreciate
it. I took the 91 and divided it by 10. I think that's probably
yeah, I like your years. Logic a lot.
Yeah, that was a good way to go
it
about
was.
It. And actually, that was my guess as well, so I was wrong.
Yeah.
I like it when people think about these things.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, thank you much.
We appreciate it. Thank you. All right, number nine, incorrectly reporting the health premium tax credit. I'm not even sure how that one works, frankly.
I don't know anything about that one.
But beware that if you try to take a tax credit, you better make little enough money to justify it. Number 10, taking an early payout from an IRA or 401k. You have to report early distributions, and you have to pay the penalties, or you have to justify that the money you took out was exempted from that by one of the written exclusions. Number 11, claiming day trading losses improperly on Schedule C. Schedule C is for your business, not for your investments. That's a Schedule D for capital gains and losses.
Is that a common income? That's a common mistake?
Well, a lot of people say, well, it is my business. I'm a day trader.
Oh.
But that's where they start to look at it. Form 4797 claimed as ordinary income or on Schedule C. No. There's things. Just know that these are things they'll look at, so think about what you're doing. 12, operating a marijuana business.
Duh.
When you buy it for your own use, it's not a business expense, people. 13, failing to report gambling winnings or claiming big gambling losses. Gambling losses are deductible to the point of your winnings and not one extra dollar. Know that and be able to document it. Number 14, engaging in currency transactions. Anything over $10,000 is reportable on an SAR, suspicious activity report. If you have transactions bigger than that, you better have some documentation for them because that's going to get filed and it could be matched up on your tax return. 15, claiming the foreign earned income exclusion. So if you live and work abroad, you got to know what those rules are. There are a few other things, but those are the big ones. Now, one of the common mistakes that people have been making throughout my lifetime, and you hear this over and over, well, I always leave something for them to catch. That is the dumbest idea in the history of taxes. Take everything you are legally entitled to take. Don't leave anything for them to find. That's like saying, I'm going to grab a couple $100 bills and flush them down the toilet on April 15th and then file my taxes the same day. It's stupid. The law is the law. There are no tax loopholes. Another name for a tax loophole is?
The current tax code.
Duh. So take what you're entitled to, not a penny more, but more importantly to me, not a penny less. Now, all that being said, it's about that time, and taxes are a lot easier than they used to be for some people. They're a lot harder than they used to be for other people.
But if you live in Florida, there's a very good chance that if you look at the bottom line, the number of dollars you paid last year, and compare it to the number of dollars you will pay this year, that it is going to be lower. So,
are there exceptions? Yes.
Yes. But most of them are not in Florida. Most of them are in California and New York and other high-tax states.
The SALT deductions, state and local tax deductions, the people in the high-tax states are going to take it on the chin, and people in places like Florida should smile all the way to the April 15th deadline.
Yep.
Or beyond, in my case. All right. Who's heard of the FIRE movement? Adam said he had.
Yeah, definitely.
It is financial independence, retire early movement. You're seeing this over and over. People saying, well, you can retire at age 40 and live happily ever after. Well, if you win the lottery, a big one at 39, obviously that's true.
That would help, yeah.
But these people claim that they have a system of doing this. So how much do you think you could save by age 40?
I mean, if you really worked at it and you had a decent paying job, I mean, realistically, between 500 and a million.
Okay. And what does it take to retire?
Depends on who you ask. For me,
well, it's an inverse type question. You got to solve the
The
given is the independent variable. The given is how much money do you want to have for the rest of your life?
Exactly. So the rule of thumb that I like to use is for every $1 million you save, you can generate $40,000 a year in income and be pretty safe.
Yeah, not touch the principal for life, which is what you have to do if you're going to.
Yeah,
quit working.
So if you want $80,000 in income, you need $2 million.
Now, Susie Orman says that number's $5 million. Other people will say it's $1 million. But I know one thing for sure. I don't want to live on $40,000 a year for the rest of my life.
Nor do I.
So I'm working, and I'm a little bit older than 40. But I think Susie's closer to right. If you are not real old yet, that would be probably enough to have 5 million. But even that, if you look at what inflation can do, even at 3% compounded for 25, 30 years, you are going to not have a very fun retirement. So we were talking in the break about what's going to happen. You know, women for years have withdrawn from the workforce for a few years because they're having their family years. And then they go back in, and one of the things they're missing is, of course, those years of experience. But the other thing is, a lot of times you wind up being technologically behind. You know, the rate of change in technology today, and it's never been any faster than it is now. So going back in, if you decide you're running out of money and need a job, what's going to happen to you is that you're not going to be real up to date with things. And I've noticed it. I was the technological head of everything in our last gig. But in this one, I'm so far behind Adam in technology, it's scary. You've got to be willing, if you're going to try to retire early, to live on a fixed income forever. And you're also foregoing your Social Security payments for all those years, which I haven't even talked about. But there are so many reasons not to do this that I don't think people are doing the public any favor when they start showing them that it's so easy to do this, that you can retire early and get stars in your eyes and travel the world and all that. But remember, you can get burned by the FIRE movement. 25 times we've had golden crosses in 91 years. Let's see if this year, this one is 26.